Ladies and gentlemen, it's my duty to report to you that Arizona Senator, former presidential candidate, and one-time prisoner of war, John McCain, is dead. Serious about restoring honor and civility to our politics, but he did pass during the night. He puff-puff passed a fat-ass blunt.
Smoking on that Al-Qaeda. John McCain, look, the hits keep on coming. He's been disrespected by one of the people in the Trump White House.
And one of those rare moments when they're cool.
Yeah.
Like, it's like every 6 months, somebody in the Trump administration just decides to be incredibly cool and just disrespecting a dying senator once again. You're winning me back. Stop it.
Ted, insult and injury. Senator McCain requested that someone do the President Bartlett yelling at God in Latin scene from West Wing at his funeral. And since they couldn't invite the president, they scrambled to find a replacement. And unfortunately, Senator McCain's shithead great-grandkid, Hunter Gavin, booked Takeshi 6ix9ine to do this funeral.
Oh, boy.
It's irrevocable. Contract is signed.
Damn, this is going to be awkward.
Yeah.
But you know what?
Edonimus Dumani, man, that makes no sense.
Wait, guys.
Scum gang!
Guys, I'm looking at my phone right now, and it does say John McCain has flatlined. I'm sorry, watched the film Flatliners last night.
The remake?
Yeah.
But Megan McCain tweeted the day in response to this White House staffer saying he's going to be dead soon. Who cares? She said, "These men who say this will be forgotten. They're nothing burgers, but my father's legacy will last for hundreds of years." And even if he did have Takeshi 6ix9ine at his funeral, people will remember Takeshi 6ix9ine longer than they will remember John
They'll
McCain.
Remember him longer anyway.
And here's how you know that. Who from 1920, who is more famous now? James Cox, the guy who got defeated by Warren Harding in the presidential race, or Al Jolson?
fuck that. Who's more famous, Warren Harding or Al Jolson?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The guy who actually won.
He become president.
He didn't win shit.
Takeshi 6ix9ine accomplished, no matter what you think of him as a guy, he accomplished way more in the past 4 months than John McCain ever did. What did John McCain accomplish? McCain-Feingold, after getting pinched as a member of the Keating Five.
Gone. Citizens United.
Annihilated. Yeah. Didn't even last, what? Like, didn't even last.
A decade.
Yeah. 6ix9ine, five Billboard Top 100 songs in like 5 weeks. Incredible. John McCain threw his entire lot behind two Republican presidents who hated the shit out of him, and he hated even more probably because one said that his adopted kid was an illegitimate black child he had, and the other just, you know, you pick the awesome thing Trump said about him, you know.
So yeah,
I really do hope that his last wish for Trump not to show up at the funeral is disregarded.
That would be
and
so
Trump goes
cool.
Trump just comes out of his oppositional defiant disorder. He's like, you're not going to let me go. Fuck you. I'm going.
Did you
and
see
he
Trump
just shows up and he just sprays beer everywhere like Stone Cold Steve Austin.
He sprays Diet Coke.
Yeah.
Trump
everywhere like Fanta fucking squirt guns like it's an ICP concert.
Trump comes in the fan man setup.
everyone said my suits were too big. They work perfectly for this. You see the way they collect air? Okay, we're going to get rid of this. This kills birds. I don't like it.
He goes up to Jeff Flake and goes, "Hey, buddy, you want to win? You want to get $5 the hard way?"
Did you see the thing where Orrin Hatch was like telling John McCain, be like, invite Trump to the funeral. Come on.
Yeah.
This is just curb your enthusiasm.
Yeah, like,
come on. It's your dying wish. But stop.
Cindy, Orrin Hatch's wife, I don't know, presumably she just walks into John McCain's hospital room and she's like, "You piece of shit, John. You're a fucking asshole. How are you not going to invite the president? Larry."
No, I just hope that it's a star-studded affair. All of the stars of bipartisanship are there. Simpson and Bowles.
How sad is it that Pete Peterson couldn't come?
That's seriously a bummer.
Man,
yeah.
Oh,
all that brain power could have gotten rid of the debt.
It's like, you know what? That Pete Peterson not being there, it's like Jimi Hendrix not being there for Woodstock 99.
Lieberman's going to be there.
He will.
Yeah.
Just imagine. And,
apparently, I did read also that John McCain, you know, as he ponders, the great beyond, he says his biggest regret was not choosing Joe Lieberman as his running mate in 2008.
That's the biggest regret in his entire life.
His biggest regret is the thing that would have split his party and guaranteed that he went down as one of the biggest electoral losers of all time. He's a genius.
Joe Lieberman would be selling tummy tea on Instagram. Just a great way to get your summer beach body in line if you're a busy mom. It's a great thing that you can do. Okay.
I am seriously though imagining. So yeah, all the great heroes of bipartisanship who are still alive come to John McCain's funeral, and it's over, and they're all the last ones there. All the fail kids and media vampires are gone. It's just the real grizzled veterans of the halls of power. And they're just drinking. They're sharing the whiskey. They're sharing tales of John. And they just get that last sort of like heroic moment of like, God damn it. We have a little bit of life left. We love this country. Let's do it. And they all pile into a car and drive to Washington to pass a bipartisan bill to bomb Iran.
Thinking it's a Lieberman and Simpson and Bowles, or Lieberman and Lindsey Graham break into John McCain's hospital, steal his body, and drive it to the desert and burn it like Graham Parsons.
Okay, who's going to be at that funeral? Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, Joe Lieberman, Ellen K. Simpson, Erskine Bowles, the Expendables of bipartisanship, and Arnold. Arnold will be there. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Schwarzenegger will be there.
You know what's the saddest thing about John McCain? Due to the torture he endured, he was never able to dab. He fought for our freedom to dab, and he could never do it.
I know why you dab, but it's something I can never do.
John, dab! This is an order! I can't. John, don't lower yourself into voting for Trump's tax bill. This is an order. I have to do it. My kids can't get real jobs, okay?
John McCain also can't give the thumbs up as he lowers into molten steel.
Nope.
Molten steel just is him voting with Trump 94% of the time.
What do you say? You want to start the show?
Let's do it.
Joppa, let's go. Okay, we are back, and without any further ado, let me introduce this week's guest. Sitting with us this week is Jake Flores.
Hello, what's up, Chapo?
Doing good. A Lenny Bruce for our times, you know, a man whose comedy is so dangerous that the feds are getting involved.
Yeah, it feels good to be a free man.
Yeah.
Feels really nice not to go to jail. You know the feeling you get when you cancel plans? It feels fucking great, man.
So, I don't know if you guys probably saw this story this week, but Jake, you got a visit from ICE last weekend.
Technically Homeland Security.
Homeland Security, okay.
DHS.
DHS, but it was because you made a Twitter joke about killing ICE agents.
Yeah, no one thought you could post that hard.
Post
so hard, motherfuckers try to find me.
So, I mean, this is both a funny and kind of disturbing story.
Yeah, it can be both.
Yeah.
That's sort of how it goes now.
You have to take this really seriously. It was fucking weird, dude.
Are you and Nick the only people we know who have been visited by federal agents?
It's so fucking weird because
it's the new standard though. Like, yeah. If you're a comic, it's like, oh, you think you're up and coming? Where was your visit from a federal investigative agency?
Yeah, what buttons are you pushing? You know, And it's like, he got FBI, I got DHS. We need like Adam Friedland to get CIA or something.
Well, actually, the army did come to my house because they saw the clips I shared of me sniping on Fortnite. That's different.
They wanted you to join the Rangers.
They were there to recruit you.
They were like, we're going straight into the Rangers. You don't even need to pass Ranger school because we can tell how strong.
They're like, sir, select your class, engineer, assault, or scout.
You know, you're joking, but like, I remember like military people coming to like my high school and basically pitching it as like, you guys like gaming, right? That's actually like a tactic they use.
Yeah. I mean, I know like the Pentagon, like they definitely have people in the room with the guys who create like the Call of Duty games for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, they're hand in glove with those guys.
And then they're used for training and recruitment independently. They have their own videos that they show the people who they sign up.
They're like, only one life in this one, though. No restart.
What if they recruited from, like, new Mario game? Because that's what wars are like now. Soldier, I order you to get to your heart boxers and jump around Manhattan.
You got the big water cannon.
Guys, Helmand Province, it's just like being in Grand Theft Auto at 5-star level and the cops never show up.
Our files show that you are one of the most respected operators in the Homestuck fan mod community. We need your creativity and sensitivity towards jokes for our mission in Afghanistan. Do you understand, soldier?
Rebuilding the nation of Afghanistan is a lot like Stardew Valley.
A lot more opium.
Except you're growing opium.
Our files say that you gave $300 worth of add-ons to an e-girl in League. This is the kind of dedication we need in Syria.
Yeah, we're aware of your record at the game Katamari Damacy.
We're rolling up all these Talibans into a giant ball.
I can't believe we never thought about this. That is the type of game Trump would get entranced by.
So, Jake, to begin with, like the beginning of this story, what was the actual joke you told?
Okay, so where all this comes from, and just to get it out of the way up front for context, I'm mixed race. I'm half Mexican, right? My dad's family's from Mexico. My mom's white. So I kind of
tacos with mayonnaise on.
I mean,
pretty good crowd so far.
Hello, Harv de Grace.
Guys, this is a sensitive topic because I'm mixed race as well. I'm Russian Jewish and Ukrainian Jewish.
Where do you get your borscht?
Where do you get your Hitler?
I get my borscht from the invented nation with no culture that all became Nazis after the USSR. What? Huh?
So Cinco de Mayo was last week, and I was thinking about it, and I was kind of arguing with somebody online about it, because every time there's like a Latinx holiday, specifically like a Mexican holiday, there's always this sort of slew of, you know, clickbait articles about cultural appropriation. Mm-hmm. And they are kind of complicated. I think that they're a little bit disingenuous, and I think that there's like an outrage sort of industry online now, and I just
noticed. Jay, come on.
And it's funny to me because you notice like there'll be
Cinco de Mayo parties, and then there'll always be like, you know, frat guys or sorority sisters wearing sombreros and fucking, you know,
And those
drinking Coronas and shit like that.
Those things are then drudged up online and sort of passed around as like, can you believe this? And then it really plays on white guilt in a lot of ways, I think, where most of the people that argue about this shit are white, because it's just how they should be presenting themselves or whatever. So it's a really funny thing, and I think it's a little bit spurious, I guess is the way I would put it. It's also, we get into all that, but it's not really important. But so basically, I was thinking about all that, and I was thinking how funny it is that that's still a thing the further we get into Trump's presidency, because there's this fucking thing called ICE that exists. So for both of those things to exist at the same time, you know, for people that are just online and their only politics come from Facebook, to be sort of, you know, it's like you're holding up an umbrella in like a hurricane, you know, mm-hmm. you're arguing about this very silly thing while there's this Gestapo. So I was thinking about that, and then I trailed off into joke writing because I got a stand-up tour coming up and I am working on material. And so separate from my political beliefs, a funny thing just kind of occurred to me about this, that it would be a good premise for a bit. And the bit is, I have a solution to both of these problems. It'll solve ICE and cultural appropriation. Here's how it works. White people should be allowed to culturally appropriate to the degree that they fight against ICE. For example, let's say you're a white person and you fucking murder an ICE agent. Now you're allowed to wear a sombrero, right? Pretty cool. No one can get mad at you because you fucking killed somebody, you know?
Oh, and if you go on a 5-kill streak, you get a poncho.
Exactly. I'm not even joking. This is the bit. So
it's great.
5 people, you get a poncho, right? The more people you kill, the more kills you rack up, the more offensive shit you're allowed to do,
right? If you
right?
score a dozen, you can do an impression of Speedy Gonzalez.
Yeah. And no one can give you shit over it because you're doing way more than everyone else, you know? You're like this fucking warrior at this point.
And I mean, you bring up, yeah, like the fact that there is this like literal American Gestapo right now that is like literally asking people for their papers and rounding them up. And then just this week after Homeland Security came to visit you, there was the thing that they... John Kelly announced the new policy where they're now saying that they will separate children from their parents at the border.
And then he said, put them into foster homes or whatever.
And then someone asked him, doesn't this seem a little cruel and heartless? And he said, not really. He's like, the kids will be put in foster homes or whatever.
Yeah.
I love that, or whatever.
I guess if you sent your kid to Afghanistan and... I don't know how that turned out. Yeah, foster home or whatever doesn't seem that bad.
Doesn't seem that cruel and heartless. Yeah. You're right, but you know that guy,
parent of the year.
Yeah, that guy's blood is ice water, though.
Oh my god.
Yeah, no, he's
the biggest fucking monster in there.
So, what was it like? I think you got to the end of it, and it was like 100. You can just be racist.
Yeah, well, there had to be an end to this bit, and so it's if you solve the whole problem, now you're allowed to just be full on racist, like with no rules.
Chris Kyle did it the wrong way.
Yeah,
he was killing like Iraqis and stuff.
Yeah, if he turned his gun on his fellow occupying troops, he could have said Haji all he wanted to.
Right. There you go.
You have unlocked N-word perk.
Yeah, it's an achievement you get.
So did you do this on Cinco de Mayo?
Yeah. And so I posted it on Facebook and Twitter. I just have a habit of cross-posting jokes like that. They're the two platforms I sort of use to flesh out jokes or to promote stuff or just, you know, frankly, I don't know why. Like, why do you post? You know, that's a big question. I don't know. I just put shit up there, you know?
I post because I breathe.
Yeah. So I put these two things up there and it was weird because no one really took issue with it on those posts, like on the tweet thread or on Facebook. One person was like, I bet you're going to get in trouble for this. That's about it. Nobody, like, I didn't really get anybody who was a big, like, MAGA fucking, you know, chud or whatever, which does happen sometimes, but nothing really happened. I aggregated an audience or something of people that all think that sort of shit's funny, which is really interesting because when this happened to Nick and when this happened to, or when this sort of thing has happened to friends of mine, it always appears that what's actually happening is that social media is a bit of a panopticon and it's other users that then report and go, oh, this is bad. I'm going to report it to Facebook or whatever. And when that happens, they always take the post down. But they didn't take mine down, which leads me to believe that it didn't come from another user. It might have come from some sort of like algorithm that Homeland Security is using.
Right. They just like words yeah, kill keywords. And yeah. ICE agent.
Yeah. I guess
I would kill to give a firm handshake to an ICE agent.
See, that's why you should have said compromise them to a permanent end.
Yeah. Fuck that.
And that's like,
and cops, but also, cops don't but know also what be that... shirtless and wearing cut off jean shorts and Timberlands.
Yeah.
Sorry, you got written up in the New York Post.
Yeah, that's my favorite part.
The New York Post wrote this up, but all they did was just reprint all of the interview that you did with friend of the show, Catherine Krieger of Splinter.
Yeah, so they basically just copy-pasted it, and the only way they really added their conservative, like, sarcastic edge to it is just by using, like, sarcastic quotation marks around various words.
They're like, comedian Jake Flores.
Yeah.
So, just reading the actual joke, and it says... 100, after you kill 100 ICE agents, you're allowed to be full-on racist and no one give you shit about it. Drive a lowrider, call people wetbacks, get a weird tattoo of a cholo that's also a clown for some reason. Nobody can stop you. You earned it.
It's funny, right?
That's really funny.
That's the worst part about all this is, you know, people keep asking you, like, oh, do you regret it or whatever? And I'm like, I think it's fucking funny. I think it's got legs, you know?
Yeah,
you should bring that on tour. That's a fucking great joke.
So... since they didn't take it down or anything, I'm assuming the first time you knew you were in trouble was literally when the door got knocked on.
Yeah, and that's kind of, it was kind of weird because, you know, they do a lot of things to sort of intimidate you and throw you off.
But, like, how long after you hit, like, tweet to the, you getting a knock on your door? Did
okay, the definitive time frame because I read the New York Post earlier and I remember the line of them going, the comedian cracked the joke at 2 p.m. So I cracked the joke at 2 p.m. They showed up 9 a.m. the next day at my door. So less than 24 hours.
Damn.
Wow. Yeah.
And what happened was kind of, it was kind of jarring. And I need to clarify something as I used a little bit of colorful language and said that they kicked my door in and they technically didn't. The story just needs to be told as for what it is, because I'm not trying to like portray myself as someone who got more fucked with than they did, but I mean, I did get fucked with.
The agents of the federal government showing up at your door, whether they kick it in or knock, is still pretty, pretty unsettling.
So what happened is I live in a shitty like loft and it has all these like leaking pipes and stuff. And like one of my windows fell out the other day. It's fucking crazy, right? So there's this repair guy that just periodically shows up. I call him all the time. He just shows up whenever. And he bangs like a fucking madman on my door like he's a fucking Department of Homeland Security. So I woke up. I've been awake for 5 seconds. I hear this banging on the door. And I think, oh, it's probably the repair guy. That's when I open the door. They might have been trying to bang in my fucking door. I don't know. But then they did this shit where they stick their foot in the door. And I've talked to like lawyers and activists about this. And apparently by their own rules, they have some weird legal thing.
They're like vampires.
They're like vampires.
You can get the foot in the door, then they have to let you in or something. Yeah,
like, hey, jerk off, come with me. You can live forever. Sound good?
Yeah.
Sir, do you have anything in your pockets? Any crucifixes? Any garlic?
Am I going to get stuck by a stake? Do you have any wooden stakes in your pocket? So, am I going to get stuck?
For real, though, but that's funny because the other part of this is that I lived in this loft for a long time, but I've always lived there just kind of in a room with this artist who made all this crazy new metal, like mannequin parts, like corn shit. There's all this shit all over the walls, right? And so part of what they were doing as soon as they came in is they started taking pictures of everything, I guess to build some sort of case file on me, who in their head is this like new metal corn terrorist anti-ICE guy.
Oh my God, you're like a domestic terrorist on like Law and Order in like 2000, like the year 2000. It's like, oh, I listened to corn and I'm satanic and I just want to blow stuff up. The devil.
That's Street Fight. That's Brett and Brian.
Yeah, that is Brett and Brian. Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing, you just dime out Brett and Brian.
It's from an era when the cops all thought that the next mass shooter was going to be dressed like the Crow.
Yeah.
Yeah, like for a while, we thought the next terrorist was going to be the Demonious X video where he's playing Postal.
God, innocent times.
Oh, another toasted bitch.
So
now that time is coming.
So wait
back.
A second, like, so back. You open the door and then they just stick their foot in immediately and just sort of like barge in.
Yeah, but the thing about that is that I didn't really resist because there's this concept that I think has some truth to it, which is that the way a lot of people's opinions of the police are directly correlational with their amount of interaction they've had with the police. Right. Yeah, and this also relates to how you act when you're getting arrested. And I have been fucking arrested a bunch of times. So
for other funny jokes.
Hey, Jerkoff, you're going to explain this reference to me. I don't quite get it. 700 faves, though? Not bad. I like the idea of cops just arresting you because they don't understand the joke and they want you to explain it to them.
What is a big mood?
Oh, sir. Man. In this world, fucking Dennis Miller is like Steve Biko.
Okay, how the fuck is Britney Spears like the Maginot Line, Jerkoff?
So a couple Won't of things crack. Occurred to me all at once, and one of them was that I need to sort of like go into survival mode to some extent because, you know, trying to get out of the situation probably isn't going to work. I mean, I only have one door. They're already here. I'm either going to get arrested or not. And also, you know, there's something I could have done, which a lot of people have sort of reached out to me about, which is just freeze up and sort of plead the fifth and whatever, which if you have an actual, like, something to lose, you should do. But I found myself in a unique position because I'm a fucking comedian. I don't have anything. I don't have.
Also, you had to have thought, oh man, this is some good content right here.
It's already hilarious. Like, as soon as I realized what was going on, I was like, well, I might die, but this is like funny. You know, like you can't really separate those things or whatever, right?
What did, like, so how many of them were there?
Four guys.
Four guys.
Yeah.
So, like, what did they look like? What was their sort of, like, demeanor and appearance?
So, they were lanyard dorks.
So, these weren't, like, the aww, hot dog neck, Oakley-wearing fucking cop.
No.
These are, like, the nerds that they send out.
I mean, they're moderators, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. The federal government's mods.
Yeah.
Did they actually have lanyards on? Did they show you identification?
They did not, and I didn't get a warrant. And part of what's going on here is that they, I think, probably purposely wanted to throw me off by waking me up. So, like, I didn't really think. I didn't have a lot of time to check those sort of things. I didn't get their names.
They came in at the crack of morning at 1 p.m. before any reasonable person gets up.
But that's a good thing. Like, I mean, it's very easy to, like, think back on this about, like, what, you know, all the things you should have done, but, like, in that position, you're sort of, like, off balance. You don't really, it's hard to, like, rationally assess, like, how do I approach a situation like this?
Yeah, and I had some instincts, you know, and I've also prepared on some level for this sort of thing, just in case it ever happens. And so one thing that happened was they did ask some leading questions, and a lot of people have sort of asked me whether I thought they were playing dumb, because a lot of times they will, so that you'll keep talking so they can draw information out of you. So one thing they did was they asked me, well, do you have anyone in your life who is affected by this issue? Which, like, everyone does, but, you know, they're trying to bait me into then going, yeah, you know, this person, you should go talk to them about it, you know?
If just, you know, a little PSA, listeners, if a federal agent ever asks you, homo says what, do not answer.
Yeah.
It's one of their leading questions they like.
Yeah, watch out for any goateed federal agents who come up to you and say, who are you guys?
Yeah, they ask you if you want a Hertz donut.
We're going to take you on a little ride along. It's called Punch Buggy.
Mr. Flores, are you now or have you ever been a member of the Pen 15 Club?
Yeah.
All right, so we need a field sobriety test. I need you to spell I cup out loud.
Right, yeah. They sicken up dog on you.
So they come in your house and, like, how do they, like, introduce, like, the reason for them being there? They're
so,
just like, we saw your posts.
They start, I don't remember the first thing he said, but he sort of starts talking about ICE, and I sort of go, okay, I get it.
Yeah, right.
Like, I just, also because this happened to Nick 2 years ago, I was like, I have a template for, you know, reference of how this goes down, oddly enough, you know. So they start asking me about ICE, and I think what they try to do in a lot of situations is intimidate you, which would have worked, A, if I had anything to lose, and B, if I wasn't so fucking hungover and thrown off. So it took a little bit of the wind out of their sails, to be honest with you, I think, because they started asking me about it, and I just didn't fucking care to say anything else but the truth. So I told them, I'm a comedian, and I know that you know that because you clearly looked me up. I mean, how did you find me, you know? And it's a joke. It's a work of fiction. I mean, it's not, you can't selectively treat jokes as statements.
Well, you said
sometimes,
like, if I had written a screenplay or a novel about a guy killing ICE agents, would you be knocking on my door?
Which, by the way, would make, like, an excellent HBO fucking prestige television dystopian Hunger Games type thing, the whole cultural appropriation killing game, you know?
it's a guy who's just like the Punisher, only his skull is a Deus de los Muertos skull.
It's basically Kevin D. Williamson wearing that outfit.
Yeah. With a machine gun.
Yeah. So I started to ask him the question, and what was really weird is that he went like, yeah, okay, I could see that. And I was like, well, if you agree with me, why, like, you could have sent me a fucking email, you know? Like, why are you here? This is so weird.
That is the weird sort of subtext of all this. This is a sort of weird electoral districting thing, but why do you think Virginia turned from, like, red to kind of reliably blue in a relatively short amount of time? It was George W. Bush greatly growing the size of the federal government and necessitating more federal employees and contractors in, like, sort of the DHS structure. And despite them working in, like, sort of jackbooted capacities and for jackbooted agencies, they are technically higher educated and higher paid and sort of trend towards being, like, metropolitan liberals. So our image, yeah, of these DHS guys is, you know, hot dog necked, Blue Lives Matters guys who write open letters to, you know, Kanye West's kids. But in reality, a lot of them are, like, kind of urbane people that would understand this joke, but it doesn't matter because their job is to kick in your fucking door.
Right. Because, yeah, the hot dog neck guys are the grunts or the foot soldiers. These are the nerds, you know, the detectives or whatever.
No. Like, oh, yeah, no, I see your point. This is pretty bad. All right.
That is true about ICE, too, because, you know, ICE only became ICE like 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's very recent. Yeah. It's, that's why when people think it's a radical position to want to obliterate ICE, it's like, do you know how long it's been around?
And it came from, like, Tea Party immigration resentment shit. Like,
yeah. Yeah. And they had to reduce any kind of standards for admission for federal law enforcement.
They literally did recruit from the Call of Duty leaderboards for ICE.
Well, they have the lowest standards.
Yeah, like, when I think of, like, your average ICE agent, like, I think of someone who is, like, has the same, like, psychopathic authoritarian tendencies to, like, get revenge on everyone in high school that cops do, but are still, like, too dumb and failed even their shitty psych
test. They failed the fitness test.
They are the most 4F guys.
They're just, like,
all of
giant, round, hot dog skin maniacs.
ICE is where
they've got fucking Oakleys on, but, like, their side of their head fat has grown around the Oakleys, so they can't even take them off anymore. They're like Bebop and Rocksteady.
It's like those photos of, like, a bike that's been left in a forest and the tree has, like, literally grown over it or something.
ICE is where you go if you fail, like, the fitness and problem solving test for Securitas.
Yeah, they give you a test of fitting shapes into into like, slots.
Sorry, buddy, you didn't have what it takes to be an Andy Frayne usher, but here's your ICE badge and gun.
Okay, is my fucking job, is it coloring in the entire cat without going outside the lines, or is it arresting fucking burps? But,
I mean, again, yeah, jokes aside, ICE is a...
Depends what color the cat is if you work for ICE.
It's a completely new agency that, came out of, like, you know, Tea Party hatred of immigration, and, again, killing them or not, abolishing ICE should be the bare minimum for any politician that's running for office. If they can't say we should abolish ICE, they're not worth supporting.
And, you know, there's a similar argument people have with, like, the healthcare industry, for instance, where they're like, oh, where are those people going to work? The other default position any future candidate should have, federal department to eliminate pit bulls.
I gotta say,
uncontroversial issue.
That would take care of a lot of these dudes. If you just said you could shoot dogs all day, they'd be like, that sounds great. Just give me a dog where you just walk into a room and empty a clip into a bunch of dogs.
Oh, that thing you found, Will, where, like, the cops are like, listen, you think it's all fun and games to legalize marijuana? Well, you know those drug sniffing dogs? We're going to have to murder all of them.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Did you guys see that? You guys see this week? Yeah. It was, one of the downsides to legalizing marijuana is that a lot of these drug sniffing dogs are going to be out of work, but then the only thing we can do with them is just put them down immediately.
Yeah. The idea of just like a cop with like a Punisher logo on a steamroller, like front wheel, just flattening a row of canine officers.
The thing,
like,
about it, though, is that, like,
this is hurting me more than it's hurting you, little guy.
You'd like to have people adopt the dogs, but once a dog gets a taste of authority, you can never boss him around again.
Yeah, and they're also ostensibly hooked on, like, weed now, or what is that all about?
Hi, I'm Joe Kennedy III, here for sensible solutions to marijuana policies. And then he straps on a World War II era flamethrower and then just sprays an entire kennel full of police dogs. Is this the future you want?
Guys, we have some sad news. The entire Kennedy family was filming a commercial for the Sensible Marijuana Policy Institute, and they all got into World War II era Spitfire fighter jets to strafe a field full of dogs, and they all crashed into the sea.
Their collective blood alcohol David level was 10.0.
David Frum doing the, you was a good boy. You want to catch, and then fake throwing, except it's a hand grenade.
David Frum tearfully in an M1 Abrams shooting depleted uranium shell at a kennel. He's like, look what you made me do.
No, cops, they love killing dogs. They love working with dogs until the dog gets about, I don't know, 5 years old and gets like a burr in its paw. And then they're like, nothing for it.
Yeah.
and then they love to all line up and salute as they take a perfectly healthy dog into a vet to get like fucking shot up with phenobarbital.
They also, by the way, love leaving their dogs in hot cars. Cops do that all the fucking time.
That's called heat style training.
So... Oh my God.
Man. Cops rule.
Cops rule 2018, baby.
This is the year of the cop. Cops and men are coming in huge in 2018. I'm rooting for all of us.
Well, they're such funny people because, like, as tools of the system, they can't simultaneously keep up with any of the political reasons that the laws they're enforcing exist. So they have to justify that, and they never can inherently, which is kind of what happened with this fucking guy. Because he started asking me like why I, you know, even had that attitude about ICE and things like that. And I started explaining to him, and I was just referencing things that he just was like, what is that? And unless he was playing 4D chess and he was dumb, he really didn't know what the fuck I was talking about.
Well, they don't have an idea. Like, cops really don't have an ideology besides, like, resentment. And, I mean, you get to keep them because they, like, make about as much as us for pretty much the same job, which is sitting around with your friends all day being bigoted. But, you know, they don't need to have one. They just have an authoritarian personality disorder.
Well, I feel like they need to justify their own job because, it's, you know, it is kind of bougie and kind of professional class shit, you know, when you have to... You get a job, and then after you get it, you have to justify why it exists and why it fits into the world and stuff like that.
Now, what, like, so there was
it's not one of those like self-evidently important jobs like Twitch streamer.
So, like, there was one guy who was sort of like interviewing you, and then the other three guys are just taking photos of your apartment.
They're taking photos, and back to this vampire shit. I just have to explain one more thing. So, at some point, someone who lived in this place found, I guess, this huge cross, like you would see on the wall of a church. And then brought it home, and we put it upside down on the wall. You know, it's kind of funny, weird satanic thing, right? But then someone got so fucking high, I guess at some point, they were like, what's more metal than an upside down cross? An upside down cross that's upside down. So yes. They turned it all the way back up to a regular cross.
Oh, you know what would be crazy if we went to church every Sunday and tithed 15% of our income, dude.
Yeah. So at one point, the guy's like asking me about what I believe in. And he looks up at the fucking cross. And I'm like, no, don't take that seriously. That's like my roommate's shit. But also, if he was a vampire, I would have fucking blown up, right?
So like, and then the other thing that you said in the interview is like when the guy was sort of like, well, you know, like, what's your problem with ICE, man? And then like, and you're like, what do you think ICE does? And then he said like, we stop sex trafficking or something.
Yes. That's what ICE is for. Right. And that's
he's like, that's the main thing they do.
Those guys just love women.
Right. And I think that's really kind of, that's the most important part of the story, or what I really gleaned is what they believe they're doing. Because I told them that's the same bullshit they used to pass Sesta Fosta. They do this thing where they allude to a nebulous, uncountable underworld of sex trafficking.
The movie Taken.
Yeah. And that you can't argue with it because sex trafficking definitely exists, but they can't put the numbers to it to justify things like Sesta Fosta, right? So with Sesta Fosta, you can take a look at all the people that they like arrested right after they passed it, and they were all sex workers that they arrested for sex work, not for sex trafficking, right? So it's really easy to see what happened there. They used a boogeyman to convince a bunch of people, oh, this is why this thing exists. And if there are outliers and they sometimes do, they fuck up, it's an aberration. It's different from the main work they do that no one talks about, right? That's what cops always use to justify like the killings and they don't show you all the times we don't kill people is basically the argument. But the difference is police on the side of their car, it says to protect its service. Like, there's a thing there you can argue is a mission statement that's good, and they're fucking up and getting away from it. With ICE, the stated mission is bad.
Yeah.
The stated mission is a Gestapo.
Check people's papers, break up families, and then just, like, herd people, ethnically cleanse this country and put illegal immigrants into privately run concentration camps. And I'm using concentration camp in the original like meaning of it, which was
Boer
like,
War.
The Boer War, what the British did to like isolate a population that's ethnically different than you, and you know.
Yeah, exactly.
So like, how did this resolve itself? Like, how did they leave, and like, how did you leave it with them? Like, when did you realize that like I'm gonna get away with this, or like I'm not going to jail?
Well, like halfway through this conversation, as they're like conceding points to me, and like they're
you're
like
defeating them with logic.
They're their weird like intimidation thing that they feel like they started with, and it's part of their protocol, just deflated pretty hard. And so I was just sort of sitting around with them. And the mood really changed. Like, you could feel it in the room. It went from, like, holy shit, something's about to go down, to this very weird, like, Coen Brothers-y sort of, like, we were just sitting around a table, and I was explaining Sesta Fosta. And I was saying, like, at one point I go, like, okay, so it's like, you know, when they make a bill and they say it's about one thing and they add all this, and I was like, what's that called? Like, snap my fingers like this. And one of the guys in the background of this whole scene goes like, ah, pork. And then we all go, ah, pork. Right. Like, together, we're like talking our way through this and shit. So we kind of have this conversation, and then near the end of it, I'm just like, okay. And they go, you know, oh, right, I'm supposed to say something to intimidate him. And one of the guys is like, good luck on your tour next week. The tour was in 2 weeks. But, you know, he's saying that to sort of freak me out. Yeah, oh, they're watching me. And he sort of tells me, like, okay, well, we're going to keep tabs on you, and you should expect another visit. It might happen, right? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of interesting because, like, I feel like this would have freaked out a lot of other people, but, like, I already kind of understood us to be in a surveillance state. And this happens with, like, I don't know, different communities, communities of color and things like that. People that have just been harassed by the police more are kind of more want to go like, yeah, duh, you know,
yeah.
Didn't really freak me out that much. I kind of assumed it was already happening. Now I know it's happening. They might be listening to this, you know. There's all sorts of
enjoy
levels
the
to
riffs,
it.
You pigs.
Yeah, but
hey, you know where we don't need any cops? In Riff City, baby. in Catherine's article, she did get a statement from ICE press secretary Jennifer Elzea, who says the kind of language expressed, even in an allegedly joking manner, is reckless and irresponsible. It potentially puts at risk those who have taken an oath to uphold the law and public safety. But again, back to your point about like ICE versus the cops, like the oath they've taken to uphold is like I pledge my life, honor, and loyalty to arrest children and separate them from their family.
I am your first line of defense against a Guatemalan mother of four.
Yeah. The other angle of this that is really funny to me is that, like, there are so many libertarian free speech dork comedians that would have loved this to happen and imagine it would happen.
If they gave a shit about deporting illegal immigrants. Yeah.
Sir, you're under arrest for being too atheist online. Freaking people out.
Right. All the things they believe in are not things that are really subversive to a level that you would actually get fucked with.
Are you telling
me
the intellectual dark web doesn't actually hold beliefs that are in any way dangerous to those in power?
Or new in any way? My name is Agent Givens. This is Agent Harris. April 3rd, about 1300 hours, you posted, women want equality, but they won't split the bill on a date. This is too subversive. You are under double arrest.
Well, now, Raylan, it's always nice to see you darken the door of my abode. I see you've been checking my Twitter account recently. Have you liked, faved, and retweeted, Raylan?
Now, Raylan, I'm on a little thing called Our Stand-Up Shots. If any of these pique your interest, you are free to repost them with attribution.
Well, we all got to get used to this because this is the new normal because this happened to you. And then shortly after this happened, The Guardian came out. Do you have that?
I want to talk about that.
Let's talk about that now.
So like, Jake, like, you know, your story, like you said, it was disturbing, but also funny.
Yeah.
Just the same week that like when you were having you on just the other day, The Guardian had this big story about something that happened that is similar to yours, but like a million times more terrifying.
Yeah.
And this is basically there was a black activist. His name is Rakim Balugan, who basically, you know, he did a lot of like Facebook videos and posts about like how the justified anger at the police for all these killings of black people. He was arrested by the FBI and put in jail for 6 months.
Yeah.
They held him in jail for 6 months. He has kids. He lost his job and his home during that time. And the scariest thing is that the FBI got onto them because someone showed them an InfoWars video.
Right.
Where Alex Jones is like, they're coming to kill us. You see this guy here? He says, go and kill
and
cops.
I told the DHS guy, like, if you're worried about people inciting shit, go fuck with Alex Jones because he's actually doing this.
They're all Alex Jones subscribers, though.
Right.
All the grunts.
Which is so funny because in the 90s, Alex Jones was all about, if the ATF shows up at your door, you're legally allowed to shoot him in the face.
Right.
This guy, they
like kicked down his door at like the middle of the night, handcuffed him, arrested him in front of his kids. And put him in jail for 6 months all the time trying to justify this case. And, of course, they couldn't ever bring it to trial because there was absolutely no evidence that he had ever made any specific threat against a police officer. He just said, and I think quite justifiably so, I don't feel bad if a cop gets killed after I see, you know, this shit keeps happening.
That guy has, there's a GoFundMe up for that dude.
Let's put that in the show. I mean, that is really terrifying and disturbing.
Yeah. A lot of people sent me that article after this whole thing went down. And most people, I think, have my back on a lot of this stuff. But I got a couple of annoying online scoldy people that sort of wanted to go like, look how much worse it could have gone if you were not, you know, whatever. I'm like mixed. I'm kind of white.
Full Mexican.
Right? Like, there's like shit like this.
Which is hilarious because like your entire timber for all this is like, yeah, this is not the worst thing that's ever happened to any.
Right. But I did want to address this on a big platform because they have the wrong take. The thing about that is there is some level of privilege to what happened to me, but we're always telling people with privilege, be a good ally and use it, right? And that's what I fucking did. I used the fact that I knew I could probably get away with that shit to do it, raise a bunch of awareness, make the whole story.
And now, Rakim's story is also terrifying because we know that, like, very early on, it was DHS or the FBI. They released a report or a threat assessment about domestic terrorism, and the big thing that they were concerned about was, quote, black identity extremists.
Right.
So, like, this is just COINTELPRO, like, all over again, where it's just like, yeah, they are, and then, I mean, again, like, this is, I mean, I don't know how controversial this is, but I have been, like, seeing things online about how a lot of Black Lives Matter as activists in Ferguson have ended up dead, suicides.
Not just Ferguson, New Orleans, tons of other fucking places. People who film videos of cops killing people, they end up, the guy who filmed the Eric Garner video, like, I think he's still locked up.
He's still in jail, in solitary confinement most of the time.
I think it's more than likely, like, Darren Seals, for instance, from fucking Ferguson, was killed by cops.
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing is that these guys, in Ferguson specifically, these murders are often just sort of, none of them are solved, and then the local police sort of shrug and say, well, you know, gang violence, that's what it's like. If you don't let us do our job, this is what can happen. But these are not like gang style killings. These are guys who got killed and then put in cars that were set on fire.
Yeah, no, they're all in cars, all the same way.
This shit is real. And I was talking to Sarah on Left Coast about this earlier. She came from like another country that was already a police state over here. Whole life's been police state. And there's this kind of thing that, you know, if it feels like this is like challenging your view of the world and it feels a little absurd to be like, this is how these things are, that's probably because you come from like a little bit of a safer just paradigm, and that's fine. But like, that's why these stories are getting told. Like, people kind of need to understand that this is a reality. You know, the police are killing these people. You know, they are committing these acts. And I don't know. I feel like it's really hard to get that through your head if you grew up, even if you think of yourself as a radical or a leftist or whatever, you still just have shit programmed into your head from, you know, when your parents were like, call the cops if something bad happens, you know?
And literally every television and movie program.
Yeah.
I was, I grew up in a upper middle class white bubble, but my dad just personally hated cops. So
that's awesome, though. Good for him.
He just didn't like them as people. He was right.
This dovetails with like another thing that's like not a new phenomenon, but it certainly feels like, again, over the last week, there have been so many of these fucking stories. And now, to preface this, usually on social media or, you know, in any kind of public forum, whenever I see white people saying shit like, white people, am I right? We're the worst. I always roll my eyes because I'm like, well, that's pretty fucking late. If you're not white, feel free to complain about white people as much as you want. However,
it's very funny how guilty white people are.
Well, however, this is one case in which I will go against my own advice and just be like, white people, shaking my damn head, because there have been,
they do be loving calling the cops.
White people love calling the cops on people.
Hamburger.
There are like literally 19 stories this week about just white people hearing drum machines and calling the feds.
Off the top,
can I get the 5-star rating on GTA now?
Off the top of my head, there were the 4 black women checking out of an Airbnb.
They didn't
who
wave.
Did get the 5-star GTA. They got the helicopter called out on them because literally they didn't smile and wave to a neighbor.
I mean,
and
that's
then
suspicious.
The owner of the Airbnb they were staying with, when reach your comment, was like, they all could have avoided this if they had just smiled and waved at my neighbor.
Jesus Christ.
Yep.
And good. That was
Lord.
They saw a group of women, like, clearly with luggage and shit, like getting into like a taxi in front of a house, didn't wave, didn't acknowledge their little like a white person tight lipped sort of, where you go like that and go,
hey girl, smile. Yeah. Hey, smile.
Yeah, the bird smile that the Airbnb owner type has.
Just cat calling them.
Yeah. call the cops. And then the cops brought out a helicopter.
Why? We have a 339 Samsonite luggage. What the fuck?
There was just this morning, I woke up to another one of these like viral video stories of a woman who looked eerily similar to Kenny Powers. Yes,
she was very
called the cops on black people who were just barbecuing in the park on a Saturday.
Yes, because they were not using the fire pits. They were using their own barbecues.
She said, so when the woman who was filming her was like, why are you calling the cops? And she said, because charcoal grills, our city will pay more money and we have to pay more taxes when children get hurt.
Bitch, are you Peggy Hill? What's going on here?
Well, I mean, how much does it cost to get 15 SWAT teams to come out to get people who are fucking cooking a barbecue?
She just sounded like one of those Miss America pageant people that doesn't have
US Americans. Yeah. It was that same halting.
Smashing words together.
But that would be awesome if every time you constructed a sentence, your brain was like, you were playing Super Mario, you were jumping from platform to platform frantically. You're like, oh, how am I going to connect these words? Woo, made it.
But the increased prominence of this stuff is partially because people are filming it now and we get to see it instantly on social media. But I also think it's part of this broader phenomenon we've talked a lot about how white people got Trump and thought they were going to get all the respect. And it didn't happen, so now they're basically using their allies, their fellow white people in the police office, to sort of reassert a sense of like social power. And like I'm going to get these fucking minorities to respect me because I'm going to call people who could literally kill them in front of me and not get in trouble.
And like it's not like this wasn't going on during the Obama administration or the Clinton administration or before that, but I think the thing that's interesting is that, like, it's not like these people weren't like this before.
No.
But I really think, like, when you talk about, like, the Republican base, like, the psychology of the people who make up, like, I don't know, real America, again, this is a broad brush, but I think you're dealing with authoritarian personality types. And the important thing about that is that authoritarian personality types, like, they may be assholes, but they become real assholes when they think they have permission from a leader figure. Mm. And I think Trump, from day one, both to law enforcement people in law enforcement themselves, remember at a campaign rally, he said something like, oh, just smash, yeah, put their head on the, you know, like crack their head into the car when you put it in. Hey, that's good. That we used to do that. That's funny.
And
it's just like I think, you know, very consciously sort of giving people permission to really let out what's inside of them. And like with the stamp of the president of the United States on downward, both for individual cops and these suburban authoritarians who call the police because they see a kid like, you know, running in the street or something, or riding a bike the wrong way down a one-way street or something.
Yeah.
And of course, anxiety riddled urban liberals who have they might not want to, you know, they're not as unapologetic about their sense of racial anxiety, but they have a similar need to sort of feel like they're in control of public spaces.
Perfect example of that. Again, this week, that the grad student at Yale who called the police on a black woman who was just napping in a common area in a dorm. And there was video of that, too. And then if people looked up this person's like work, and she was, of course, like, you know, a liberal, you know, writes about like oppression.
Grad school is pay to win, by the way.
And then why are you calling the cops? And then what did she say? Like, I absolutely have the right to call the cops here.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I do not, like, here's a question. When is it okay, if ever, to call the police?
I cannot.
I was like, I'm trying
situation.
To think of like a single situation, like
maybe like if someone is in your house with an axe trying to murder you,
and you're like locked in the bathroom, and he's hacking through the wall.
I know,
like,
I know,
like like Nicholson style. Yeah.
Well, the police.
I do know the one of the times it's you can do it. So you're out of data on your LTE, but you need to know Hinder's entire discography. Just call any cop and they'll know.
But the thing is mind-boggling, though, how unbelievably petty these things are that people call the police
and
for.
What's terrifying is about it is just because for them it's nothing. It's just making a phone call. I get to feel big for a minute. I get to feel like I'm in charge. But for a person who the cops are getting called on, it literally could be the fucking deaths. Because a ton of the most high-profile unarmed killings of recent times have been because some fucking skittish white person just like, well, I want to be safe. I want to be sure.
Yeah, the cops are on a weapon.
There was that guy.
James Crawford, Tamir Rice.
The one that just happened where that guy got shot in his own backyard.
Sacramento, yes.
Yeah, in Sacramento. The guy who called the police on it did an interview after where he was like devastated and said like, I'm never calling the cops again. I can't imagine that would happen.
And so, like, take that to fucking heart, people.
Yeah.
Right. That's what they're for.
And the thing is, I think cops also sort of, like, have a brand, and there's a sort of an economic reason for this, because they have to keep justifying their existence. So they sort of sell you the idea that, like, they are there to just keep things safe, and they need to be out and doing all this stuff that they're doing, that there's, like, a reason. There's a demand for it, right? I saw this, I saw a thing on Facebook earlier today about a bunch of cops that went undercover to an ICP concert.
That's a federally recognized gang.
That's true.
Right, yeah. They put on the fucking Juggalo makeup and everything. They took a picture. It's fucking hilarious.
Yeah, do they have to drink Faygo in front of people to prove they're not undercover? Yeah. Man, I haven't seen you hit this shit once.
It's like the scene in a movie when a cop's about to do blow and he's like, oh no, how do I get out of this?
No, you got that type 2 diabetes?
Yeah, but the way that they branded it in their you know, those hilarious cop tweets where they're like, we kept the place safe today or whatever it was. All right, it went great. We kept the concert safe. As if what was going to fucking happen without them
there? Was going to be a shooting over tech decks.
Yeah. It's like, just admit you wanted to go see ICP. It's cool.
That is my favorite, though. Like, I follow some police precincts in New York on Twitter because sometimes they have really funny content. And one of the funniest things they always do is when they do those, like, pictures of, like, their hall from, like, you know, raiding the streets or whatever. And it'll be, like, a $50 bag of mids. And they'll be like, we got this off the streets. And I always want to be like, hell yeah, keep mids off our streets. Yeah. No more mids. That's what I want. I want drug sniffing dogs that only sniff out mids and attack.
Yeah.
Well, you've heard about that. I don't know if it was the Benevolent Society or the NYPD. But one of those.
Oh, the sergeants,
patrolmen.
The sergeants.
We go. All right, the sergeants.
Oh my God! We can read that.
This is
tweet
insane.
Was the cop episode of episode one.
Like, I was going to say it was Alan Moore's Rorschach.
Yeah. So this is a tweet, a very, very uncontroversial, very common sense tweet by the Civilian Complaint Review Board, which is something that New York has to try to hold police accountable.
It's a fairly meager.
Yeah, and because it was as a part of a pathetic outreach on May 4th, they're like, hey, it's just classic, like, nerd bureaucrat shit. Hey guys, fourth, remember Star Wars, we all love that, right? Fourth, hey, well, May the Fourth Amendment protect you from unreasonable searches and seizures. And if you feel like your rights may have been violated by an NYPD officer, file a complaint here.
That's earnest.
Just a sad. Okay, everybody.
But, like, think how uncontroversial that statement is. Like,
it's literally reminding you that you have a constitutional right.
This is like constitution fucker shit. This is just reminding you of the Bill of Rights.
Yes. Yeah. And so then this was replied to by Edward Mullins. The head of the the head of the sergeants union. By the way, why do the sergeants get their own union? Get out of here!
They're workers.
Yeah, this is what he said. You are all a disgrace. You sit on your ass and target the NYPD all while growing up on the nipple of what's easy. One day you will dial 911 when evil is at your door and thank God for the NYPD.
Seriously, can we post some of the open letters from the cop episode one? Because that's exactly what it sounds like.
The nipple of what's easy.
The nipple of what's easy.
That is a hell of a phrase.
Yeah.
Have you heard the nipple of what's easy? It slams, dude.
Yeah, he turned down a lucrative post as a tenured professor of English at Columbia to be the fucking sergeant's rep. Those are cops. They really want you to know that your Fourth Amendment rights are an impediment to them keeping the streets safe.
They literally said being aware of your Fourth Amendment rights is a disgrace.
Yes. Just snarling pigs.
Yeah.
Just feral fucking hogs in Oakley's.
Hogs, razorbacks.
Jesus.
That's the thing. Any culture of impunity is going to breed just awfulness
and
attract awful people.
They're also kind of isolated. Like, cops have their own culture, which is why they have their own myths that they believe.
Yes.
Like, oh, the cell phone videos are actually just a big distraction and an aberration and an outlier or whatever. But they all just talk to each other and hang out with each other. You know,
they're all in the same, like, Facebook groups.
Yeah,
there are
like,
a lot of them aren't even allowed to have Facebook.
You probably don't have any other friends that aren't also cops.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't think you socialize much. I
went over to Steve's house and he fucking choked me out after I beat him at ping pong. I'm not going over there anymore.
Yeah.
But the most, like, perpetually
self-victimizing group in America are cops.
Yeah. And like, they have all the power. And
That's incredible. Just that limp dick tweet. But you know, guys, I know you like Star Wars. And you also like the Constitution. You fucking piece of shit. Get your pussy on the pavement.
And they demand to be seen as these brave figures when every time they shoot someone, they go, why'd you shoot him? And they go, it's because I was scared.
Yeah.
Well, then you're a pussy. You're a fucking big pussy, man.
Well, that's the thing, because, I mean, a combination of violence, of fetishizing violence and also victimhood is the social basis of fascism. Mm-hmm.
And also being inordinately afraid of black men in particular because you think they have super strength.
Yeah.
They're like,
just
like
all of your deep racial anxieties.
Like they're like One Punch Man, you know, like that's all it'll take to kill you is just getting punched. Like,
it's just take all of these just deep racial anxieties and you just, your answer is, well, I have a gun, and that's going to keep me from having to deal with them. But that's why the real fascist threat in this country are people in uniform. It's not dorks in folk and polo shirts.
I remember
tiki torches.
I remember there was same, animal family as cops, but not quite a cop, a prison guard at this jiu-jitsu gym I trained at in Chicago. So he, showed up because he wanted to, learn how to fuck people up, but, a big part of, any training is that you suck at something you try first, and you get dominated by other people. And he just immediately quit after two classes because
he didn't win a fight immediately.
Yeah, he couldn't take losing against people who had done it more than him.
You know what would have helped him, though, in those fights? A gun. Yeah.
He would have won everyone. This is an unrealistic training environment. I usually have three guns on me.
Dude, and one to throw on him so I don't get in trouble afterwards.
Mm. I mean, it's hard to imagine the state of law enforcement and the cops in this country getting better, but I do want to say I think a ray of light is Krasner in Philadelphia. Yeah. I know we've talked about that before. And I think really I was talking about this the other night, and I think Bernie, he's sort of gone, he's old, maybe he's gonna run again in 2020, but what's the next guy? What's the next thing? And to me, Krasner is now the bar that any politician should be willing to reach to be worthy of your support.
And that's the thing you have to think of it as. You don't think of it as, you're just investing your hope in another figure. The idea is that you create a standard for bare minimum requirement on issues. And then you force people to adhere to it. That's what that means. That's what that's why organizing in the age of Trump, when you have no real power, it comes down to insisting on standards. And then you have something like Krasner where someone is able to take local control and very quickly, dramatically change things. I remember I was very interested in the Krasner race, but I was I don't know if I want to be the idiot who says, hey, Krasner is great. And then he gets in there and 2 weeks later, some fucking Philly cop, takes his own private blunderbuss and kills a fucking teenager with it. And Krasner's out there saying, well, all the facts aren't in. We need to. So, but he went to town as soon as
he
got in there.
He went ham immediately.
Fired an entire raft of fucking prosecutors.
Cop kissing fucking prosecutors. Yeah,
when he fired the prosecutors, that was, I never thought I would see that in a big machine city politics. Incredible.
A 9% drop in the jail population in 6 months.
He freed Meek Mill. And then not only that, but the DA's thing and local power is very interesting because unlike politicians, DA's actually have a shitload of power immediately to instantly affect change.
Yes.
So I think
that's the thing. People fixate on legislators, but the beauty part about being a legislator is you have no actual responsibility for anything. You have a couple votes people can get mad at you about, but for the most part, you're never held to account because you're not your job doesn't involve actually administering a system of organization or in the case of a fucking DA oppression. And what this is showing is that you have to, where you can, see the degree to which you can change the culture around these institutions, so that you it's going to be really interesting to see is the Philly Police Department still going to be the place where the fucking guy's got the, Fractur Fatherland tattoo on his arm and that's not a big deal? Is that culture going to coexist with Krasner's the DA? And I think that's something that's going to be seen. But the degree to which we have a hope of changing this culture.
I mean, it's hard to imagine them coexisting.
Right, exactly.
At least they'll be antagonistic to each other.
Right, and it's but that's going to be resolved in some way. And that's where the bend is going to come. And that's where we kind of have, that's like, because it does seem very hopeless when you look at the totality of policing in America. Is these kind of shoots and these sort of just friction points are where we can examine like where there is, if there is a path forward in a positive way.
I just remembered the joke from the first ever paid Chapo live show, the Street Fight, when Brian said that every cop in Philadelphia looks like a cop who gets killed in a Batman movie.
He did that, and I remember my brain blew out of my ass because
one of the funniest things I've ever heard.
Because I had a distinct thought. We were sitting in front of the City Hall, like
beautiful City Hall, drinks. By the way.
Yeah, by the fucking Rizzo statue.
Terrible
about Nazis.
Person.
Yeah. And we're sitting there drinking our drinks, and these just giant cops are standing there, like their arms are out to the side because they're too fat, and they've got the bulletproof vests on for their arms to go all the way to the side, and they're just kind of like bobbing around, like
doing
like
the full waist turn rather than turning your head.
It's like they have an inner tube, and they're like in a pond or something. And I just had this image of professional hitters from like a heist movie rolling up on
Hans
motorbikes
Gruber.
And just murdering them all.
Hans Gruber.
I like how like cops have so much shit on their belt. It looks like the background in Mystery Science Theater or something. I always imagine you could just run up and pull a cord and they'll just start inflating and shit and roll them away.
And yet they still have less. They still carry less shit on them every day than Sebastian Gorka.
Yeah, Sebastian Gorka's
go bag has like a tent,
like a Rottweiler.
Yeah,
a ship in a bottle for some reason.
it's got one of those World War One era like machine guns with treads you can drive around on.
But yeah, like talking about like you know what is like the baseline for what we can expect of politicians? Abolishing ICE.
Yes.
Ending the war on drugs, legalizing marijuana at the very least.
And mass exoneration of everyone who's currently in prison and has been in prison.
Yeah. Because legalizing marijuana is sort of like putting a Band-Aid on a bullet wound, considering that there are still tons of people in jail for low-level
drug crimes. And whose lives have been significantly damaged, if not ruined, by their encounters with the law over something that we're all coming to the conclusion is not really a crime.
Legalize marijuana, but also decriminalize
every other drug.
Every other drug, absolutely.
Yeah. And like again, thinking something like to Krasner or whatever, like and the idea of we are no longer going to prosecute people for possession or use of marijuana, and then the huge pushback that he gets is from cops who say, and Joe Kennedy III, by the way, made this exact same argument about legalizing marijuana. He said, and that this is a line oft repeated by the police, is that this will make our jobs more difficult, which is odd because if you think. Here's a huge swath of things that you won't have to be policing or bothering your time with. You think your job would be easier, but no. What their job actually is to enforce social control on poor and minority populations. And that will be a lot harder if it's legal to smoke weed.
Yes.
Don't worry, you'll still find a fucking way.
Yeah.
There'll still
because
be Airbnb
some,
owners. Yeah.
Some fucking, yeah. Some suburban dickhead is going to call somebody because a dude's getting his car jumped. In a parking lot, and they're going to send Ed 209 to shred him with high-capacity rounds.
What do you say? I mean, up.
Yeah. All right, guys. We've done a lot of joking here. We may have gotten a little bit heated, but in all seriousness, we love our cops.
We
love our military. They're important. And that is the end.
All cops are beautiful. You mind if I promote something before we get out of here?
Go right ahead.
All
right.
My name is Jake Flores. I'm from this. I don't know why I said that.
I'm here to say.
Did you get it mixed up with like your first day of kindergarten?
I just don't usually have this big of a platform, and I'm a DIY motherfucker. I'm not represented. I make all my own shit, so I need to shout out real quick. Just all my things to try to make some money. I'm going on tour with Mishka Shubali, who's a musician I adore. I was a fan of his, and then we met, and his career was on the way down. Mine was on the way up. We started doing gigs together. Now we're both back on the way down. So we're doing house shows and shit all across the country. I'm going to be in Denver for a week. Also, I have a podcast called Pod Damn America with a bunch of DSA dorks who are comedians. We do lefty shit and talk about the news and all sorts of stuff. Mr. Cleo's my dumb psychic hotline podcast. And also, if you were interested in all that stuff I was talking about with Sesta Fosta,
there is an event coming up called International Whores Day, which is historically goes all the way back to sex workers in like France. It's actually an issue that the left and the right are both not very good on, but it's labor and it's really important. So please come out and support and learn something. That's it. That's my piece. I'm done.
Links will all be in the show description. Sweet. And also, I want to thank you as well for doing the show Pod Damn America, which is a podcast title that makes sense because it's based on an actual phrase,
right?
Unlike Pod Save America,
yes,
which is just
gibberish,
nonsense, absolute drivel.
Yeah,
because great American Reverend Wright,
yep,
said "Goddamn America."
That was cool.
Whereas literally no one in history has said "God Save America" because that's not a fucking phrase. Because the phrase is "God Save the King."
Yeah, and then when you add wordplay onto it,
like a more common phrase like "pause America."
Well, guys, I think that wraps it up for this week. Thanks again to Jake Flores.
Thanks for having me.
Stay free, brother.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Godzilla! Shit has been too long. I got my 12-gauge sawed off. I got my headlight turned off. I'm about to bust some shots off.